This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, special edition for UFC 200. My name is Jake Litarski. I am joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, give John a follow at John Littering. You can give me a follow at JAKESKI52. John, we got some terrible, dreadful, probably the worst news possible here on late Wednesday night here. I think it was about 10:30 Central for me. That John Jones would be removed from the card for a violation of the U.S. anti-doping policy here. We don't know for sure what substance he tested positive for yet, but we do know that there is not enough time to appeal that, and as a result, we will get Mark Hunt versus Brock Lesnar as the main event of UFC 200. Still looking for a new opponent for DC, but at the time of recording here, that fight is less than 24 hours away. So all in all, John, what was your initial reaction to this, and any intrigue on a possible DC fight after that?
Well, you know, I was as shocked as everybody else. John seemed to be doing really well since his comeback, as far as, you know, with the troubles with the law he had last year. And, you know, we should preface this before we get into this as saying, of course, he's innocent until proven guilty. He will apparently have his B sample of his B sample tested tonight, which is more or less just a confirmation of what has already, you know, been tested before. As Dana White said yesterday, the USDA, when someone does test positive for something, you know, they go over it multiple times to make sure that, you know, it wasn't a mistake or an error or anything like that. And I believe I read earlier today that Jones tested positive for two different substances. They did not. They did not say which ones exactly. So, you know, he'll have his due process, but I mean, I think we're both in agreement that we would both be, you know, pretty surprised if this is overturned or anything like that. You know, I can't remember in MMA, at least, you know, an instance where something like this is reported and then it ends up, you know, being not true. I guess the easiest way to say it.
Yeah, exactly. A couple just kind of clarification points on this. This came from an out-of-competition sample on June 16th, I believe. So John has had his troubles with, testing positive for recreational drugs in the past, and those have been well documented.
And this was not a recreational drug.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to make clear, is that the United States Anti-Doping Agency does not test for recreational drugs out of competition. So this has got to be some sort of metabolite, diuretic, hate to say it, PED. Of course, like you said, of course, it's good to mention innocent until proven guilty, but the UFC is not going to be taking any risk if he was using PEDs and letting him fight DC. Interesting enough, though, if this would have happened about a calendar year ago today, I'm not quite sure it would have played out the same way without USADA being involved. Am I right there?
Yeah, you know, this is the crazy thing about this is, as much as this is terrible for, you know, everybody and horrible, you know, for the sport, I'm glad this happened in the sense that, you know, these kind of things can't happen in this sport. So as terrible as it is that we're going to lose a great fight and, you know, don't even get me started on all the, you know, promotional money the UFC lost and all this stuff, you know, these kind of things and this kind of hardcore testing, you know, is good for the sport. This is the way it's supposed to be. You know, we're going to lose big fights because of it. This is, when you think about it, this is as big, you know, if there was anyone who had any doubts about, you know, the validity of, you know, the USDA's drug policy and their drug testing, they basically just canceled the main event of the biggest card in history, what, 48 hours before it was going to happen? So, you know, so if you have any doubt about, you know, the validity, this should pretty much tell you all you need to know about that.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people question, you know, whether or not USADA might be in UFC's pocket because UFC is you know, I guess they work for the UFC technically, but looks like they're going to honor the decision, not trying to cover anything up. And as shocking as it is, I agree with you that it's good for the sport to ultimately get things cleaned up.
And I would, and this is going to sound ridiculous, if I were the U, and they would never do this. You know, if this, just, let's just say, you know, John Jones goes through the appeal process, and, you know, the number that is being thrown out by a lot of people is he may get, you know, upwards of, you know, a 2-year suspension somewhere around there. And again, that, you know, that's a long way off and, you know, many appeals and many hearings down the line and everything. So, you know, that's not, you know, that wouldn't be happening any, you know, anytime in the near future. But I just don't understand how you can continue. Now, I think we both agree that he is the most physically gifted fighter in the world.
Correct.
He has physical skills that other people simply don't have. And that's one of the reasons I was surprised when I heard this, because we spoke about this before. We both thought he was going to win fairly easily.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a clean sweep at our staff picks. Very few thought DC actually gave him a chance in this one.
You know, and he didn't, I certainly don't think, you know, if it turns out to be some kind of performance enhancing drug, you know, I certainly don't think he needed to do that in order to win. You know, I think we both thought he was going to win easily anyway, but he's 28 years old now. He'll be 29 in a couple weeks. And then, you know, hypothetically say, you know, he gets a 2-year suspension and that's probably 6 months down the line. So, you know, it's theoretically possible, you know, he could be out until he's, you know, what, 31-ish in that area. Mm-hmm. Now, he would still be in his, you know, the prime of his, you know, athletic career. But if you're the UFC, and they would, I don't think they would ever, ever cut a guy who is, you know, the best, most gifted fighter in the world. As mad as Dana White is, and if you, anybody saw the press conference yesterday, when Dana announced this news,
he was steaming.
He was seething. He, you know, he wasn't like screaming mad, angry. And this, you know, his seething kind of attitude, to me at least, is even worse. He was just so frustrated and so taken aback by what happened. Mm-hmm. I still have a hard time believing that they would ever just flat out release him, simply because I can't see them allowing the best fighter in the world who's under contract go to some other organization. But I don't understand how, if you're the UFC, you can ever trust this guy in a big spot again.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. It'll be very, very difficult for them to rely on someone, because this is the second time it's happened now. And it puts Dana White and the whole UFC in a very tough spot. Everything was almost going too smoothly up until this. Like, something had to happen.
Yesterday, there were no... This whole, I mean, other than the, you know, the smaller injury Derek Brunson suffered, there have been no injuries on this card. You know, they were able to work out a deal with Vince McMahon and the WWE to get Brock Lesnar back, you know, for the card. So everything was going so well. And then, you know, 72 hours before the event, this happened. So it's, as you said before, it certainly appears by all indications that Daniel Cormier is going to remain on this card. They don't know who it's going to be. There was a report earlier that it was going to be Anderson Silva. That seems to be a mistake simply because Anderson had, I believe it was gallbladder surgery not all that long ago.
Yeah, gallbladder surgery like 6 weeks ago. Yeah, I think what happened, I've been watching this all day, Combate and Globo from both news outlets in Brazil seem to report it. My Portuguese is a little rusty, so I'm not quite, couldn't read the whole column, but they made it seem like it.
Dana flat out denied it.
Yes, in a text to ESPN's Brett Okamoto, he pretty much,
He said that's, forget it, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Anderson's going to be in Vegas for the Hall of Fame event anyway, so I'm sure that had something to do with it.
Yeah, I think Dana White inducting Big Nog.
Yeah. Dana White said, I believe they have two options on the table. He didn't say who. One is a title fight. One is a non-title fight. And, without any inside information here, I would guess the title fight would be Musasi simply because he's A, already on the card, and B, he's, as I said before, with Derek Brunson dropping out, he already has a replacement opponent. Mm-hmm. So I get, and he's a top five fighter anyway. So my guess is he would be the title fight. The non-title fight, I mean, forget it. You could pick a million names.
Well, White was dismissive of the idea of Michael Bisping. He said he's in no condition to fight.
Yeah, he said in between fights, Michael is just, and that doesn't surprise me, to be honest with you.
So Michael's
like a camp guy.
Exactly.
I'm sure Donald Cerrone would fight him. That guy doesn't care, but it's not going to be him either.
Yeah, I know a guy. He'd say,
he'd be giving up 40 pounds, but he don't care. But it's not going to be him either.
Realistically, I think Musasi, and I know Alir Latifi kind of put his name into the hat. He's scheduled to fight at UFC Hamburg. That's like a way wild card. Not quite at the level of Musasi, I wouldn't say yet, but I don't know. Another possibility. Just for speculating.
I mean, the weigh-ins are 24 hours away.
Yeah, at the time of this record, less than 24 hours. Because of the new policy, they can weigh in early now. So people are going to weigh in tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to kind of assume, you would think, it's someone who's already in town. I mean, what are you going to do? Fly someone across? Half these guys in this sport don't train in the United States anyway. So how are you going to get guys to Vegas in 24 hours and have them, weigh in? And, so we're going to have to wait and see. I guess without any inside information, I would guess it would be Musasi. I mean, to me, that just makes the most sense simply because he's already on the card facing a replacement opponent. So it's not like they would have to cancel, a quality fight that was already made.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, as I tweeted yesterday, in this whole situation, Daniel Cormier is the one that I feel terrible for.
Exactly.
The guy is going to lose out. The guy busted his butt, to get in shape. And, neither of us thought Cormier was going to win. But, that's not the point. Mm-hmm. He's going to lose no matter what happens. I don't care what anyone says.
Mark Raimondi said on a live update last night that this is what happened here is so much worse than if he had gone in and gotten beaten badly by Jones, because the coaches aren't getting paid. He's not getting paid. Of course, there's still the possibility of Musasi, but it's rough.
He's going to lose money.
Yep, losing big. It's big money. He was supposed to get a cut of the pay-per-view too, which wild.
Everybody's going to lose money now. I'm sure the way they cut this thing, Brock's getting a cut of the pay-per-view, or else he wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So, he's going to lose. This is going to, there are going to be a lot of casual fans who are going to watch this because of just, the notoriety of the event. And you're going to get wrestling fans who watch it because Brock is there. But this is going to, and I'm not going to say torpedo, because this is a pretty insane card, even losing this fight. But this, they're going to lose numbers because of this. The numbers are going to drop because of this.
Yeah, I would estimate at maybe a couple hundred thousand buys, if not more than that. So
that sounds about right. I was going to say about 250, 250,000. That sounds about right.
All right. I can buy that, but we're eventually going to break down the entirety of the remaining UFC 200 card on the show. But before we go too far in, let's do the championship fights both Thursday and Friday night. Starting with Thursday night, we've got a lightweight championship fight between Rafael dos Anjos and Eddie Alvarez here. I know in our staff picks article, we both have dos Anjos. Can you give me a little bit of just a quick breakdown of why you think he is the better fighter? I mean, he's got a... quite the hefty price difference on DraftKings. He's favorite. He looks like a minus 270 to minus 295 in that range. He's a pretty big favorite. Why is everyone on Dos Anjos for this fight?
You know, I actually thought the odds would be higher, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy, Dos Anjos, is just, he's lost one fight since May 2012, and that was to Khabib Nurmagomedov in a fight where he just couldn't handle Khabib's wrestling. His last four fights, they're wins over Donald Cerrone, Anthony Pettis, Nate Diaz, and Benson Henderson. I mean, the guy, and to be honest,
that's as good as it gets.
None of those fights were even remotely close.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were a couple decisions in there, but I mean, the Anthony Pettis fight went five rounds, when he beat Pettis for the title, but I mean, we haven't seen a beating like that in a long time. He destroyed Pettis. Dos Anjos has gotten, Tony Ferguson comes to mind as well, but they're the two guys who in the past year to 18 months have really, you know, they don't look like the same fighter. They just look more confident and more comfortable. And, you know, Dos Anjos is really, really good. And, you know, Alvarez is really good too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, former Bellator champion, you know, very good fighter. But I think this fight was made more in the sense that I think it was, first of all, obviously they wanted a title fight on Fight Pass. But I think this is just more to try and get Dos Anjos' name out there. He's not particularly well known amongst casual fans, as good as he is. And, you know, it's just Alvarez has shown an ability in the past to, you know, to take a beating. You know, he lost his UFC debut to Donald Cerrone. He won his last two fights against Pettis and Gilbert Melendez via split decision. And, you know, the Melendez fight, he fought nearly the whole, if I remember correctly, I believe, he fought almost the whole fight with one eye closed. I think his eyes swelled shut with like a minute left in the first round. You know, he still won that fight. And, you know, Alvarez is a good fighter. And I don't expect this to be, you know, a 25-second cakewalk for Dos Anjos. But I think there's just too much skill there for Alvarez to keep up over a 25-minute fight.
Let's move on to the title fight Friday night, though. We've got a women's strawweight champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, against Claudia Gadeja, the coaches on the Ultimate Fighter this year. Another intriguing fight. This one is a rematch. We saw those two fight before, in which Jędrzejczyk won a split decision. I rewatched that today. Such a close fight overall here. Do you think Jędrzejczyk can pull it off once again, or are you maybe taking a look at Gadeja for an upset?
I picked Joanna, but I'm not particularly confident about it. This is one of those, you know, title fights that, you know, I legitimately think could go either way. They're different kind of fighters. Joanna is, you know, a Muay Thai base. She's won numerous Muay Thai titles. Simply, you know, probably the most violent striker in the division. Just power and combinations and a lot of kicks. And Gadelha is more probably the strongest pound, you know, the one, maybe the strongest woman in the division, and more of a wrestling based and, you know, ground game. And
well, Gadelha's powerful in their last fight. She seemed to be able to take Joanna down and kind of get her hips in the throws.
Seven times she got her down, is a gigantic number.
Quite a bit for a champion. And the fighter that apparently won the fight. A lot of people think that maybe could have gone the other way.
Yeah, it's not often that you get taken down seven times in a fight and get a judge's decision. It just doesn't happen. So, you know, this is, and we should also point out, these two women, you know, legitimately do not like each other. I know we say that, you know, a lot. Like, you know, Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier don't like each other.
Some people just put on a show, but yeah, these two ladies do not like each other.
I admit I haven't watched one episode of The Ultimate Fighter this year.
Mm-hmm. I've been following the results, but I don't know. I'll fast forward to the end to see a fight, but yeah, you know, I don't need the reality show stuff.
The women do not like each other. So, I picked Joanna, but I think Claudia has a better chance than she's being given credit for.
Yep. I mean, I pick Claudia. I'm picking Claudia because, I mean, that first fight really could have gone either way. She's got the power. And, I mean, this shouldn't – maybe wasn't – I thought it was a pretty big factor in that last fight, the accidental headbutt that put a pretty big gash on Claudia in that fight. You know, you take – that out of the mix, of course, you can play what if all day, but I think that might have had a pretty big fight. That she was obviously fazed by that and then had to deal with that cut the rest of the bout. And little things like that can make a difference in a close fight, at least to me.
Yeah, I mean, these are, at least in my mind, these are the two best strawweights in the world by a considerable amount.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So, I mean, if I had to wager, I would bet that this will not be the last time these two fight each other. You know, whoever wins this fight, I can certainly see the loser of this fight, you know, going on some kind of run that eventually leads to, you know, the two fighting again. So
exactly. I mean, you know, is just a -120 to -130 favorite. As far as like knockout potential, fight going to a decision is -250 to go to a decision. So Vegas says this will go all five rounds. So I think we're going to see another war between these two ladies.
Yeah, they're both, you know, Joanna's been fighting five round fights for a while now. And Claudia is just, if you look at, just look at Claudia, look at her physique. I mean, she's ripped. So this, you know, if this is a very, very close fight, if someone wanted to make an argument for either woman winning, you know, I'd certainly be willing to listen. I just, you know, I don't think there's much separating the two. You know, if they fought 10 times, you know, I think both would probably win five. So, you know, if you're looking at it that way, maybe you just, you know, if you just get more value with the underdog.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the main card, the one that we have all been waiting for here. Of course, a little bit less hype, of course, with the removal of Jones. Still, you know, as we're recording this, I got my Twitter open, waiting for an announcement, but not seeing a whole lot. But let's take it from the bottom up here, John. Start off getting us going. We got a couple of big-time veterans of the UFC in Jim Miller against Takanori Gomi. I personally like Jim Miller by decision. I believe you had Miller in your staff picks. Real briefly, do you think it's just because Gomi doesn't quite have enough left, or do you think Miller has a better chance to ride out a decision because in this stage of the career there isn't that much knockout power for either of them?
Yeah, you know, I picked Miller. I think I also wrote that I'd probably just stay away from this fight altogether. You know, both these guys are clearly, you know, trending towards the end.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Miller has always been a ground wrestler, but it has now gotten to the point where, I don't want to use the word incompetent, but he does so little damage on the feet that if it's not a ground fight, he pretty much has no chance of winning. You know, I tend to avoid fights like this because when you get two fighters who are aging and don't have the skills they once had, it's just so hard to realistically predict what you're going to see. You know, who's going to show up in better shape and whatever. So, I mean, I picked Miller, but there are enough other fights on this card especially that I think it's probably a good idea to just ignore this altogether. I mean, I think it could be entertaining, but I don't really know how one can realistically expect one of these fighters to come in and look so much better than the other.
Well, let's move on here to the middleweight bout, next one on the card. This is the one that's going to be a little bit in limbo based on what we discussed earlier. It's Gegard Mousasi against Thiago Santos. Santos stepping in for Derek Brunson on short notice here due to injury. Mousasi, 10,300. Santos, 8,400. Mousasi, -295 favorite. And that is, of course, if he doesn't get bumped up to face Daniel Cormier in what would look to be maybe the co-main event of that, they'd make it a championship bout here. Assuming everything stays as is, we've got Mousasi Santos. We both like Mousasi in this bout here. Can you give us a quick breakdown?
This was, like we mentioned before, this was originally supposed to be Mousasi and Derek Brunson. I was going to pick Derek Brunson in that fight, and if I'm not mistaken, they had early odds up for this. Brunson was scheduled to be a fairly sizable underdog. I want to say he was something like plus 210 or plus 215, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. He got hurt. You know, Santos stepped in, and, you know, Santos has certainly earned it. You know, he's won four fights in a row, three of them via first round knockout. But, you know, he's fought nobodies, you know, more or less. You know, the knockout wins have come against Andy N, Steve Bosse, and, you know, Nate Marquardt. So, you know, facing someone like Musasi is, you know, a whole entirely new level. And, you know, Musasi's not the most entertaining guy to watch. He struggles with, he doesn't like to, I don't know if I'd say he doesn't like to give interviews, but he's not particularly adept at giving interviews. Maybe that's a better word. He's, you know, in a kind of like a similar Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, in the sense that, you know, he's as great as Mighty Mouse is, and he's probably the best pound for pound fighter in the world at this point. He's still not a great self-promoter. And, you know, Musasi's the same way. So Musasi's really, really good. He always has been. 21 career wins by knockout, 10 career wins by submission. He's good. You know, he's good in all areas. It's just not always that fun to watch. So if this fight does indeed take place and, you know, Musasi doesn't get bumped up, I expect him to make fairly quick and easy work of Santos. Certainly might go to a decision, but, you know, I don't think he's going to have too much trouble here.
Yeah, I could very much see it going to a decision. But like I said earlier, I'm just going with Musasi based on the experience and the resume and those types of factors here. But let's move on to the final bout of the UFC Fight Pass prelims. Fans are going to get a treat in this one. I think it's a potential fight of the night candidate. We've got fan favorite Diego Sanchez against Joe Lauzon. These two, always down to throw down, have some of the great fights in UFC history. I think all fans, including myself, are hoping for a brawl. But in that type of case, who do you think comes out on top?
Well, you know, if it turns into a ground battle, you know, Lauzon's going to win. As Lauzon is going to win a ground battle with pretty much any lightweight on earth. You know, Joe Lauzon is a submission specialist. He always has been. 17 of his 25 career wins are by submission, which is just, you know, that's an insane, insane number. That's just a ridiculous number. And, you know, these are two guys who, this is similar to the Miller-Gomi fight. These are two guys who have a lot of miles on, you know, on their bodies, on their MMA, you know, careers, and they've been in a lot of wars. And you're right in the sense that this is going to be, I can't even imagine how entertaining this thing is going to be. This is going to be absolutely amazing. The big difference between the two, I think, is that I have far, far more confidence in Diego's ability to take a beating and not get stopped than I do in Lauzon's. Yeah. You know, if Lauzon, who doesn't have much power, never has, if Lauzon batters Sanchez, I don't think Diego's going to go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, the reason I personally picked Sanchez in this fight is not only because of his ability to take a beating, but in his last fight against Jim Miller, I think we saw almost a little bit of a different Diego Sanchez, as he wasn't just recklessly pressing forward and he waited out and smartly won a decision. So, I mean, obviously he's on this card because they want it to be a brawl, but I think he, you know, maybe at the later stages in his career is starting to realize that some of these other technical aspects are going to be a little bit more important than just the grit.
Yeah, no, we say it all the time, that's a direct result of working with Greg Jackson every day.
Exactly. One of the great coaches, great camps in the entire MMA world.
You know,
world.
Greg Jackson is well aware that Diego Sanchez probably doesn't have the physical gifts that he did earlier in his career. Mm-hmm. So he game plans towards his opponent, which is exactly what you're supposed to do in this sport.
Exactly here. Well, let's move on to the Fox Sports 1 prelims here. We're going to kick things off with one of the top and better recognizable prospects, at least in the UFC. We've got the 20-year-old Sage Northcutt facing off against a relative newcomer here in Enrique Marin. Sage Northcutt, of course, shockingly upset in his last bout when he was choked out by Brian Barberina. A lot of people are attributing that to some sort of illness that Sage came down with, but you're going to pay a pretty hefty price for Sage Northcutt on DraftKings, coming in at $11,300. Looking over everything quick, that is the highest priced fighter on the entire card, it looks like. So, I mean, is it worth paying up for Sage and banking on that first round knockout, or do you not really want to put that much faith in a 20-year-old here and maybe see him once to start building up a winning streak, I guess?
You know, it's what we said before about how, you know, we try and stay away from guys with the salaries that size. Mm-hmm. This would be one of the rare times, and there aren't many, this would be one of the rare times where I would consider it. I mean, the only reason, I mean, this fight is happening because it's the biggest card in history and the UFC wants to get Northcutt on the card. And I mean, Enrique Marine, you know, he's, to be honest, he's just not very good. I mean, we've seen we've only seen him in limited action. He's only had one UFC fight, but, you know, the whole reason this fight is happening is because the UFC wants to promote Sage Northcutt, as they should. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought he, you know, the kid's now 20 years old. You know, he fought a lot. You know, he fought three times in, you know, what, 4 months to begin his career? He fought October, December, and January of, you know, October and, you know, December of 2015, January 2016. Mm-hmm. He was sick for the Barberina fight. If there's one thing we've seen about Sage Northcutt that's, you know, undisputable, the kid is an explosive freak athlete. He's just, exactly. He has athleticism. He doesn't have the experience of some of these other guys. He'll make mistakes in there, but I would imagine that his pure athleticism is going to be more than enough to just, you know, blow right by Marine. So, you know, mm-hmm. I try not to spend that much money on one fighter, like we said, because if they don't get a quick stoppage win, you know, you're in trouble the rest of the night. So that's why you try and limit such high priced fighters in your lineup. But this to me seems like one of the instances where it's a good idea. Much like, you know, a couple months ago when we were talking about Chris Cyborg's UFC debut, you don't want to spend that much money, but when you know someone like her is going to get a quick finish, most likely, it's not a terrible idea.
Yeah, exactly. Before moving on, just want to say, 8 professional fights for Sage Northcutt. All 8 of them have been finished in either the first or second round. The odds to finish on this are -215. So if you're ever getting a bang for your buck at that high price, it might be with Sage Northcutt here. Well, moving ahead, we have got a very intriguing bantamweight matchup where TJ Dillashaw will look to get back on track. That's former champion TJ Dillashaw, of course, losing that belt to Dominic Cruz some time ago here. He's going to look back to get back on track against Rafael Assunção. And Dillashaw, -410, -415 favorite, that actually makes him the biggest favorite on the entire UFC 200 card. We both picked him to win here. I think, I mean, Assunção, excellent fighter, but he's just going to be a little overmatched in this one.
Yeah, you know, this, and I said before, I think that is the reason that is so big a line is because Rafael Assunção has been on the sidelines for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. With an ankle injury that originally, when it first happened, was by all accounts supposed to be fairly minor. It was supposed to cost him somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 6 weeks to, you know, 2 months, and it's now been a year and a half. So, I mean, these two guys fought in October 2013, a fight that Assunção won via split decision. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think Dillashaw is clearly the second best bantamweight in the world. Losing your belt to Dominic Cruz, you know, there's no shame in that. Dominic Cruz, when he's healthy, is one of the best fighters of the modern era. So, you know, losing your belt to Dominic Cruz is, you know, there's no shame in that happening. But I certainly am picking Dillashaw to win, but Assunção might be my favorite value play on the whole card. You know, the guy he's won 7 fights in a row, and as good as Dillashaw is, Assunção's low salary and those really, really insane Vegas odds are the direct result of him not fighting anytime recently.
Yes, I would agree, and I can very much see where you're coming from there. And I mean, Dillashaw, 11,100 for someone who lost it to his opponent his last time out, that's quite a hefty price tag. So although I'm pretty confident in Dillashaw winning, I'm not necessarily very faithful that he can get the early finish that will lead to him hitting value at that price tag here. But moving on, we've got another intriguing welterweight matchup here. Johnny Hendricks against Kelvin Gastelum here. Hendricks checks in at 10,100 on DraftKings. Gastelum, 9,300 here. As far as the Vegas odds in that fight goes, we're looking at Hendricks being a minus 160 favorite. So a favorite, but not a huge favorite here. And then, of course, worth noting here, the odds to finish being plus 145. So Vegas is liking this matchup here to actually go to a decision here. What are your thoughts on that, and how do you see this one playing out?
You know, I have Gastelum in an upset here, but the one caveat I would say is I would certainly see how both of these guys look at the weigh-in tomorrow before making a clear decision on what you're going with here. Mm-hmm. Both these guys have had problems making weight in the past. Gastelum certainly more notably and on more occasions, but you know, Hendricks has had, he gets there, but he's had problems getting there. Mm-hmm. So you know, the thing that worries me a little bit about Hendricks is he's been in a lot of title fights, but he's been in a lot of hard fought title fights. Both fights against Robbie Lawler, the fight against George St. Pierre, you know, the fight against Carlos Condit. He's been a lot of difficult fights, and I was really, really concerned about what I saw from Hendricks in his fight against Stephen Thompson in February. Everybody mm-hmm. certainly thought that Hendricks's clearest path to victory in that fight was to try and employ, you know, a wrestling-based, you know, offense against Wonderboy, and you know, what did Hendricks do?
Tried to kickbox him.
Of course. And you know, if you try and get involved in a kickboxing match against Stephen Thompson, you deserve whatever, you know, you deserve exactly what you're going to get, which is, you know, the right to go unconscious, which is what happened. Mm-hmm. So I don't like what I saw from Hendricks there. And you know, Johnny's 32. You know, he's getting up there. He's not as young as he used to be. Gastelum is only 24. So I certainly would think Gastelum has more room for growth on a fight by fight basis. And you know, this is one of those things where if you were going to tell me and guarantee to me that Hendricks was going to go with a wrestling based offense, I'd pick him to win. But just like, and I said the same thing before the Thompson fight. If you would have guaranteed me that he would go with a wrestling-based offense, you know, I think he would clearly win. But he showed in the Thompson fight that there's certainly no guarantee that that's what he's going to go with. So, this is tough. This is another one of those close fights. But, I think Gastelum has more room for improvement on a fight-by-fight basis now. But again, I would wait until tomorrow and see how they both look, because these are two big welterweights who have both had problems getting to the 171-pound limit. So I would check that out tomorrow before I made a final decision here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fortunately for both fighters, the new weigh-in policy stands to help both of them immensely. Just to summarize, like, they can weigh in the morning, and then you know the show that they do at night, that's kind of fake. It's really just for show. They get a chance to weigh in earlier in the morning, a few more hours to rehydrate, replenish their body here. So I think that's going to be a huge, huge help for both of these fighters potentially. And that's part of the reason that I think I'm going to lean towards Hendricks in this one. I would hope that he's learned his lesson after that fight against Wonderboy and isn't going to necessarily try to kickbox the whole time and use what has got him this far in the UFC to his advantage. So I give Hendricks a slight edge, but I have a tough time. I mean, at 10,100 on DraftKings, I could see using him, but I would maybe stay away from it from a DraftKings perspective just because of the seemingly likelihood that this fight would go to a decision. So that's kind of how I feel about that one.
Gastelum is pretty durable too. Mm-hmm. He is. So, and we know Hendricks can take a beating. So this could, I could see this going the distance.
Yeah, right on here. Well, let's move on to, we got a women's bantamweight matchup here. Kat Zingano, a lot of people remember her from pretty much Ronda Rousey's highlight tapes is where a lot of people see her. She's going to take on Juliana Pena, and she's a pretty big favorite in this one, actually. Well, minus 165, minus 175 is what I'm seeing here. Pretty decent price discrepancy on DraftKings here. She is 10,500, whereas Pena is 8,900. So quite the difference there here. I mean, Kat Zingano, I've seen her a little bit, some photos from Vegas and whatnot. She looks like she's in pretty good shape, and she's ready to go for this one. I know we both picked her here. Can you explain why you like her a little bit more in this one?
You know, I like her to win, but I think this is similar to the Dillashaw Sunsouth fight in the sense that, you know, why we both like the favorites in both those fights to win. You know, you can certainly make the argument that the underdog is certainly the better value play here. Kat hasn't fought since February 2015, which was the Ronda Rousey fight, which lasted something like, I want to say like 14 seconds or something like that. It was 16 seconds, somewhere around there.
So led to her counting in a commercial for the video game.
Yeah. I mean, I believe after the fight was over, I believe they replayed the entire fight like three times in a row, and it lasted like a minute. So, I mean, that's never a good sign.
Yeah.
But, you know, and Kat has been hurt for a lot of her career. She's been hurt. You know, she's had long stretches on the sideline, which is why I was surprised that she took such a long time off here. She, you know, she hasn't fought in nearly a year and a half, but for that, almost the entirety of that year and a half, as far as, you know, we know, she's been healthy. You know, there's been nothing seriously reported injury during that time. So I was a little surprised that she took so much time off. I mean, I acknowledge that there wasn't a lot of fights that made sense for her from a booking standpoint, but I was surprised that she agreed to take so long off. Now, Zingano is, I mean, she's certainly getting overlooked because of the Ronda Rousey, you know, disaster. She worked hard to, you know, earn a title shot, and she lost in 16 seconds. But I think I'm a believer in Zingano being one of the, you know, three or four top women's bantamweights in the world. But, you know, I'm also a fan of Pena. Yeah, I think Juliana Pena is very good. She's coming off some problems with the law, which always is never a good sign in the sense that you don't know where, you know, a fighter's mindset is going to be. But, you know, I just think I like Zingano's all-around game. She does a lot of things well. But, again, like the Dillashaw Sunsouth fight, I'd be willing to certainly say here that I think the underdog might be a better value play. And I would probably not use Zingano here because I think there's a better than even chance that this fight ends up going the distance. Mm-hmm.
A lot of 10,500 or less fighters, I think, that have a much better chance of a knockout here than Kat Zingano.
If you're paying that kind of money, you know, you want a finisher, and that's not really Kat's game.
Exactly. I mean, so yeah, we both like Kat, but probably Juliana maybe a better value if you do insist on picking this fight on DraftKings. Got to pick a couple dogs, so why not Pena here? But let's go ahead and move on to the main pay-per-view card. We have got a slightly intriguing heavyweight championship fight. When I see the name Cain Velasquez, I always want to say championship because I think he might be the best heavyweight in the UFC. But he's taking on Travis Brown. He's a big favorite. Do you think he's the biggest lock of the evening?
I think he's up there. I would be Cain's loss to Fabricio Werdum, where he lost his title, came as a shock to all of us. You know, a guy who was known his whole career for having amazing, ridiculous cardio, more or less, at least in my opinion, misjudged the effect that the altitude in Mexico City had. Mm-hmm. And the end result was a guy who looked exhausted, you know, and gassed out. And, you know, Velasquez, his whole entire career, that's what he made his name on. You know, being a guy who could, you know, looked like he could fight 10 rounds. And that wasn't the guy we saw in the Verdum fight. And I still believe that he is the best heavyweight in the world in the sense that he has the most complete game, the guy who can do everything. And I'm not a big Travis Brown guy. There are too many inconsistencies there for me to really take him seriously. I think Kane wins this fight fairly easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, I would have to agree with you. Travis Brown, a respectable opponent, and of course you have to acknowledge that in the heavyweight division, there's going to be some heavy punches thrown, and really anybody could beat anyone if the fluky thing happens. But I would say Cain Velasquez is a pretty solid lock for this one. And even at 11,200, he has a good chance to return value. If he doesn't get that first round knockout, trust me, that's coming in the second or third round, because I think we see his cardio back here in this one. But let's go on ahead to a featherweight matchup here. We've got Frankie Edgar against Jose Aldo. A whole lot of buzz around this fight. This is essentially a title eliminator. Possibly, if McGregor ever does get back to featherweight, I think he'll face the winner of this fight. But in my opinion, this is one of the fights, possibly on this entire card, that I am the most excited to go see in person, to get to see a legend like Aldo against someone like Frankie Edgar, who's got all the momentum in the world on his side. How do you see this one breaking down, John?
You know, I see this as a fight that is really, really too close to call. This is the fight I'm looking forward to most on the entire card. It's so hard to pick a winner here. I ended up taking Edgar because Frankie has insane cardio. He could fight 10 rounds if he had to. Aldo has earned a reputation as a guy who, even through his, you know, ridiculous long winning streaks, he's earned a reputation as a guy, and rightfully so, who fades a little bit towards the end of fights. He doesn't fight the fourth and fifth rounds like he does fights the first, second, and third. So, you know, if this is a fight that goes the distance, which I could certainly see, I have more faith in Frankie's ability to produce late than I do Aldo's. And again, there are legitimate concerns about what Aldo will look like coming off the most devastating loss of his career. You know, he was knocked out by Conor McGregor in 13 seconds. You know, McGregor walked to the center of the octagon, threw a punch, and Aldo was out cold. So, you know, when you go more or less over a decade without losing a fight, and then you get, you know, waxed like that, I think there are, you know, legitimate questions as to how you will look in the, you know, in terms of a response. And I've said numerous times, Aldo to me looked defeated before the McGregor fight began. He looked uncomfortable. He looked uncomfortable in interviews. He looked uncomfortable, you know, in the walkout. He looked uncomfortable during the introductions. I think he just got overwhelmed by all the verbal sparring that Conor throws your way. And that's not Frankie's style. Frankie just shows up and fights and leaves. So, you know, Aldo's not going to have to deal with that, you know, aspect in this fight. But, you know, I guess I have more faith in Edgar in a five-round fight than I do Aldo. But again, this is one of those, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other type feels. You know, it's two of the best fighters in the world in any weight class. Yeah. So, you know, trying to pick a winner, you know, in this kind of thing is difficult.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think I'm going to pick Edgar by a hair, just because I like you were kind of saying, what you said in your UFC 200 preview on rotowire.com, which is free, by the way. Go ahead and check it out if you're making a lineup. But what you said in there is something that I just couldn't shake, how Aldo just wasn't quite right mentally, and some of his antics maybe a little bit off. Something just doesn't seem quite right with him, and I'm hesitant to really bet on him until I can see at least some shades of the old Aldo and him coming back. And I mean, Frankie Edgar, been solid. He's on himself. He's got himself a pretty good run right now. I think he wants that title, and of course Aldo's the only thing standing in his way. He had a brutal knockout of Chad Mendes last December at the Tough 22 finale. I just think I like Frankie Edgar a little bit more in this fight. Very excited to see this one overall, though. It's just going to be tough to put one in to a DraftKings lineup here. But we do have another title fight following this one up in what is currently, as of our record time here, in line to be the co-main event of UFC 200. We've got a women's bantamweight championship fight between the defending champion, Miesha Tate, against the challenger in Amanda Nunes. Now, this belt's been changing hands an awful lot lately. Do you think it'll change hands again tonight? Or Saturday night, I'm sorry.
You know, I don't, but I give Amanda Nunes more of a chance to win than I think most other people are. Mm-hmm. You know, Miesha Tate fought a perfect, or, you know, close to a perfect fight in the Holly Holm fight where she won her title, in the sense that she took her time and did just enough on the feet and in the stand-up game that she eventually worked herself into a position, you know, to use her submission skills to defeat Holly, which was certainly Holly's weakness. Now, you know, Tate is she's not a great athlete. She's a good all-around fighter. Her submission skills are better than her striking skills, but she's not a terrific athlete. But the one thing about Miesha is she's always been, you know, she's been in a lot of big fights. She's been in a lot of title fights. And the biggest thing is Miesha has always been very, very good about tailoring her game plan to whoever she's fighting. Mm-hmm. There are a lot, we say this all the time, but it's just mind-boggling to me that you look at these matchups, you know, in some of these fights and you say, wow, all right, this guy should, you know, certainly be in pretty good shape, you would think, if he just, you know, does this or he just does this. And then you go and you watch the fight and forget it. You know, they do something totally different. It's like, but what, just what we were talking about in the, Hendricks Wonderboy fight, how everybody certainly thought if Hendricks employed a wrestling based background, he would have been in real good shape. When next thing you know, he gets in a kickboxing match with a kickboxing world champion and he's out cold. So, you know, Tate has always been good about tailoring her game plan, and Amanda Nunes has earned this fight. You know, don't let anyone fool you. She's certainly a threat. She has a lot of power. And, you know, the thing about Nunes is she has a better ground game than she gets credit for. We don't see it almost ever because she's always busy just knocking people out. But she has a better ground game than she gets credit for. You know, I think we're going to find out here how good it really is, because I think Miesha is too smart to stand there and just let Nunes wail away on her on the feet. So, you know, certainly Miesha is a deserved favorite. You know, the champion almost always is. But I think Nunes has a better chance than most people are giving her credit for. You know, I would use her, put it that way, as far as DraftKings perspective.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with you enough that I'm going to go out on a limb and go ahead and pick Nunes in this fight. I just think we've seen so much parity in this division, so many belts changing hands, that why not have it happen again? And of course, if you're playing on DraftKings, you got to pick some dogs. She sits at 8,700. She's good. And there's a lot of ways. I mean, we've seen from her last three fights, she can win by decision, can win by submission, can win with her power. And I think her power is, people don't give her enough credit for it. A little bit underrated. I remember seeing her teammate Valerie Letourneau talking about it on the MMA Hour this week with Ariel Helwani, just about how powerful she really is. I got to throw one wild prediction out there. I'm going to say Nunes by maybe a third or fourth round submission, something like that. I think we maybe see that ground game. There's a strategy that she has coming into play, just like Miesha Tate, and I think, as far as the odds separation and the price difference, I mean, it's very similar to how much Holly Holm was favored over Miesha Tate in the last women's bantamweight championship fight. So I think there's a little bit of room for profit there going with Nunes. That's probably one of the bigger upsets I've got picked out of the rest of my picks for the card there. So this is one where I guess we're going to have to disagree a little bit. I think it'll be a good fight. Very exciting to see it in person. But I think I'm gonna go Nunes, but I can't give too tough of an argument to someone that wants to pick Tate, because she certainly earned it and she has the heart and a lot of different skills and the preparation as well. So both fighters have a lot going in their favor heading into this matchup. I'm going to pick the upset. I feel not super great about it, but confident enough to call this one as an upset here. But let's move on to the main event. What is the main event as of right now? Still, we do not have a rescheduled opponent for DC Cormier. We're going to go ahead and look at Brock Lesnar, who is returning to the octagon. He makes history here. He was the main event of UFC 100 and UFC 200. but he certainly didn't get scheduled for a slouch of an opponent in Mark Hunt. This should be an intriguing heavyweight matchup. Mark Hunt loves to throw bombs. He's a big favorite. He's 10,400 on DraftKings compared to Lesnar's 9,000 here. I mean, I saw an article where the fighters were picking fights today, and most fighters think Mark Hunt takes care of business here. Do you think Lesnar has... I mean, everyone has a puncher's chance in this type of thing, but you're pretty confident in Hunt for this one?
You know, I'm confident in Hunt in the sense that he's just... The guy's just so damn durable. You know, you can't stop Mark Hunt. So, unless... I think the only way Brock wins this fight is if, and Brock has already more or less come out and said that he's going to, you know, just try and wrestle Mark Hunt, you know, the whole entire time. You know, he's basically admitted that. So I would be, you know, we know what Brock's going to do. And Mark Hunt, for all the flack he gets for his physique, you know, he's a pretty good athlete. Mm-hmm. He's a better athlete than he gets credit for.
And he has pretty good takedown defense,
yeah,
too.
He doesn't do it much. He's a pretty good athlete. Now, Brock has never, I said this before and it sounds a little strange, Brock has never liked getting punched in the face. No one likes getting punched in the face. Mm-hmm. But Brock has never been a guy who has enjoyed, you know, stand-up wars, so to say. So it's just, if Brock was facing, like, Frank Mir, say, you know, obviously Mir's going to be suspended, so, you know, that wasn't possible.
What a blown opportunity, by the way. Without that suspension, we'd almost certainly be doing Lesnar versus Mir 3 in this event.
And I would pick Lesnar in that fight. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Hunt is just really, really, really durable. He's almost impossible to finish. You know, look at the beating, the beating Stipe Miocic put on him recently. You know, Hunt was just absolutely destroyed. And what happens? You know, the guy can just take a beating. And, you know, Brock Lesnar has, I believe the other day, he said he's been training full time for what? I want to say he said 3 weeks, I believe.
He said he sparred 3,000 rounds, maybe a little bit of an exaggeration, but yeah, he's going to be prepared.
What can you realistically expect from Brock Lesnar at this point? Mm-hmm. You know, I said before, my guess, and this is all this is, I would guess this is the last time we're going to see Brock Lesnar fight in the UFC. It's just, he's certainly getting, you know, a huge paycheck, but he also gets a huge paycheck from Vince McMahon.
Exactly.
And he doesn't, I don't know, for our listeners out there who, you know, don't, you know, watch pro wrestling, Brock works far from a full-time schedule. Brock as far as pro wrestling. Brock is more or less there just for big events, and the shows leading up to big events. So Brock certainly, you know, is not a full-time wrestler either. You know, he's, mm-hmm. you know, he certainly only makes appearances during big events. So, you know, Brock is a freak athlete, always has been, you know, but he's also getting up there in age. So, you know, Brock, assuming he, you know, employs a wrestling, you know, base offense, if Hunt's takedown defense can hold up, which it's underrated and it's better than people give it credit for, people just look at him and look at his physique and say, oh my God, okay, that guy's a horrible athlete. He certainly isn't. So if Hunt's takedown defense holds up, I think there's a good chance that he just, you know, will be able to beat Brock up on the feet. And the main reason I took Hunt, like I said, is just because I think he's just too durable. You know, a guy who is nearly impossible to finish is not the kind of guy a guy like Lesnar, who's been away for so long, should probably be fighting.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I think you make some great points with Hunt. I think the majority of the MMA community would probably agree that Hunt will win this fight. But again, I think I'm going to have to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to pick the man, Brock Lesnar. I can't help myself. Here's why. I think that I've got a few reasons here. I'm not just picking him because when I was growing up and watching him in the UFC, I thought it was crazy. Part of what got me into this sport. So try not to be too biased here, but I think there are a couple reasonable paths to victory in this fight. He's 4 years younger. When he was forced out of the UFC, of course, he had that gastrointestinal disorder type, and that appears to have been cleared up a little bit, so maybe he wasn't 100% towards the end of that career. And then what it really comes down to for me is just his wrestling. He's going to have to be incredibly careful when he changes levels, just to make sure he doesn't get caught by a Hunt uppercut, because that could end his night very fast. But I think he's going to be persistent with attempting to take Mark Hunt down. And Hunt has got some excellent takedown defense, I'll give him that. It's deceptive takedown offense based on what he looks like. But I think trying to defend those takedowns for so long, maybe Brock doesn't get the first attempt. Maybe he doesn't get the second attempt. But by the third or the fourth attempt, I think Brock Lesnar will be able to take Mark Hunt down, use that all-world caliber wrestling here. And then once he gets him down, Hunt might be tired already, and then we've got Lesnar kind of pounding him out for the finish. The elbows, the fists, I mean, those lunchbox fists, the 5XL gloves that he had asked the UFC for. I think that's the path to victory for Mark Hunt, and I do like using Brock Lesnar. I mean, plus 145 dog, plus 150 dog. I think when I get to Vegas, I might throw a little bet down on him just to have a little bit more at stake here in the big card, as if we needed to have more at stake. But I do like Brock Lesnar in this one. The youth, the health, and the wrestling, I think, will prevail. All right, well, thanks again for listening to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. Once again, I'm Jake Litarski. Follow me on Twitter at JakeSki52. John Littering is my co-host. Follow him on Twitter at JonLitterINE. Remember to catch UFC Fight Night 90 Thursday, Tough Finale Friday, and UFC 200 on Saturday. Check out rotowire.com for all the recaps. Thank you for listening.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.